We're back with Anne Applebaum. And after the Venezuela operation, my colleague, our correspondent, The Guardian's correspondent in Latin America, Tom Phillips, told us on this podcast on Saturday that he was surprised by how brazen Donald Trump had been in his statement that America was going to run Venezuela and that he was doing it in part because he wanted the oil. You know, he's since doubled down on that and just restated it even after there were attempts to slightly soften that rhetoric.
Lawmakers reacting with concern after President Donald Trump said Tuesday Venezuela will turn over 30 to 50 million barrels of oil to the U.S. The president, writing on Truth Social, the oil will be sold at market value and the money, quote, will be controlled by me as president of the United States of America to ensure it is used to benefit the people of Venezuela and the United States.
How does the Donald Trump administration suggest they will actually run Venezuela, control this oil supply? What is the, you know, we've talked about it in the Greenland case, but what is the benefit to the U.S. of having its hands on the Venezuelan oil industry in that way?
So, again, you know, we're in the realm of guessing. I mean, I don't really know what they mean by that. It seems right now, from what we gather, that they're going to blockade Venezuela. They will prevent any exports of oil, and they will only allow exports that go, perhaps, this is a guess, okay, but perhaps only allow exports that go to the United States.
And they've since added that any proceeds they get from it will have to be spent on goods made in America so that the money comes back to the U.S.
That's the theory. I mean, I think that's the theory, that they'll bring the oil to America and refine it there, and whatever money they decide gets to go back to Venezuela, the Venezuelans have to use it in the United States. And so that seems like the idea. There are a lot of ways it could go wrong. If they're not making any money from the oil, they may lose incentives to produce it. Do American oil companies want to go into a Venezuela that is run in such an uncertain way, by still run by a hostile Chavista regime? You would need billions of dollars to get Venezuelan oil up to the level it was a couple of decades ago. Who's going to invest that under these circumstances? There are many, many ways in which some neat idea that we just control the oil and that's how we rule Venezuela, you can see many ways in which it would go wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that point you make about the Chavista regime, I think it was maybe you or others have been saying this isn't really regime change, it's dictator change. The Chavista regime stays in place. It's only the person at the top Trump seems to want to get rid of. He's got Maduro out. But otherwise, he's quite happy for them, the regime, to stay in place so long as they do his bidding on oil. But I just want to sort of move on to the threats that have since come to neighbors, others in the region. So he's since made noise with Donald Trump that Colombia, Mexico, and Cuba all need to, well, in the very crude language, watch their ass, is how he spoke of it. I mean, given that what we're now seeing is somebody who tends to do what he says he's going to do, how frightened should those countries be about what's coming for them?
I mean, there are ways in which Maduro was a special case. You know, the truth is that if Trump had worked together with people in the region, with U.S. allies in the region, there might have been ways of removing Maduro that would have been well received. I mean, certainly it was, you know, the fact that he's gone is pretty well received in Venezuela, even though people are very anxious about what happened next. And I've talked to people there in the last few days who told me that. But that kind of case against Maduro, you can't make anywhere else. You know, it's not like there's an illegitimate president of Mexico who can be kidnapped, or an illegitimate president of Colombia. I think there are Colombian elections coming up pretty soon. It's not as if any of these leaders can be accused of being part of narco networks in the way that the Venezuelan regime was.
But maybe he doesn't need an excuse. Maybe he'll just do it and invent a story when he has to.
We'll see. I mean, certainly what you'll see in coming months and years, I mean, we're just at the beginning of a long process of change, is you will begin to see a lot of countries hedging or looking for new alliances or looking for ways, new relationships, or maybe getting help from China. You know, big Chinese presence already in South America, maybe it will grow. You'll begin to see people react and change their relationships to the United States pretty fast.
You know, and indeed, you closed your piece for The Atlantic with these words: sooner or later, our Western Hemisphere will organize against us and fight back. Far from making us more powerful, the pursuit of American dominance will make us weaker, eventually leaving us with no sphere and no influence at all. Just unpack the thinking there about how this could actually backfire even from Donald Trump's own sort of empire building point of view?
Well, so as I said, I mean, if people perceived the U.S. role in Venezuela as positive for the Venezuelans, if it was going to produce prosperity and democracy and stability in Venezuela, they would feel differently about it. But Trump doesn't, those aren't his, maybe some people want that in his administration, but those are so evidently not his goals. You know, his goal is the expression of dominance, this demand for oil, this, you know, extraction of tribute from, you know, from a weaker country. And that will make other countries, as I just said, hedge. I mean, Europeans should reconsider whether they want to buy U.S. weapons, for example, because, you know, the software is controlled in the United States. And, you know, are you sure you're buying weapons from, you know, from a partner? Are you sure you want big U.S. infrastructure investments? You know, maybe you'd be better off with doing deals with fellow Europeans or with South Koreans or with somebody who's a bit more reliable. So you'll begin to see, and I think, by the way, some of this has happened already. I mean, you're beginning to see early signs that this is happening. People will form alliances against the U.S. They will be wary of U.S. technology. People don't want to deal with a country that is only interested in its own advantage. I mean, trade, by definition, has to be of advantage to both sides. And if it's not, then why do it?
So let's tie, if we can, all these different threads together to work out what this Trump worldview, the Trump foreign policy is. Can we now begin to work out what is the Trump doctrine of foreign policy?
That's a fool's game. Trump himself doesn't have a doctrine. He has people around him who want there to be doctrines, including Stephen Miller and maybe Rubio and maybe others. But Trump himself is not interested in long-term strategies. He doesn't understand the relationship or care maybe about the relationship between different events in different parts of the world. You know, the argument that this attack on Venezuela would encourage the Chinese to attack Taiwan, that is not an argument that would impress him or interest him, or maybe he doesn't even understand it. He's interested in winning whatever is the momentary event, whether it's an encounter with a journalist, whatever it is, he needs to be seen as the winner. And that's why it's hard to talk about a doctrine or a theory. And that's why it's difficult to predict exactly what he'll do in any given situation.
And you know, because you've been with us before, we always like to ask a what else question, something else going on in the news, unrelated perhaps to our main conversation. Just on late Wednesday, federal agents shot and killed a woman during a large-scale immigration enforcement operation, an ICE operation in Minneapolis.
Shame! Shame! Oh my God!
That video shows the ICE agent opening fire today on the female driver, now identified as 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good. DHS claims she tried running agents over and that she was shot in self-defense. But the killing is drawing swift condemnation from witnesses and many lawmakers.
The Homeland Security Secretary has said that the woman was in fact a domestic terrorist and those who killed her were acting in self-defense. First of all, what do you think of this incident and how do you think it's going to play out?
I was deeply shocked by this incident, even though maybe I shouldn't have been, simply because if you see the video and you put together the witnesses who have come, there several people have come out. There weren't a lot of people around. There wasn't a big protest. There wasn't any violence. There was nothing happening that should have inspired, you know, a federal officer shooting her in the face when she was sitting inside her car. None of this made any sense. This grotesque use of violence and then the grotesque cover-up. You know, immediately they tried to smear this woman. They tried to just domestic terrorists. And now they're talking about her, I don't know, her political views and mocking her on television. I mean, she hasn't even been dead for 24 hours. Here we're now in really an Orwellian world where immediately they felt the need to change the story. They need to create an alternate reality for their viewers, for their audience. Again, it's not totally new. I mean, this is their modus operandi, including in Venezuela and in Greenland and in the Ukraine and elsewhere, as we've seen them do around the world. But the speed with which they did it this time and the devastation they're wreaking by doing this is profoundly shocking.
Anne Applebaum, in another extraordinary and unsettling week for America and its influence in the world, thank you so much for joining me on Politics Weekly America.
Thank you.
And that is all from me for this week. To understand more about Donald Trump's plan for Venezuela's oil and how it might not be the silver bullet he's hoping it will be, do listen to Monday's episode of The Guardian's Science Weekly podcast. And on Thursday's episode of Today in Focus, my colleague Helen Pidd speaks to a Venezuelan journalist about the last few weeks in Caracas, about going on post-apocalyptic shopping trips to prepare for the worst and grappling with the uncomfortable truth in seeing the back of Maduro. Just search for both of those wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're also watching what's happening in Minnesota, as you've just been hearing all the fallout of that shooting. You can find the latest on that on TheGuardian.com. But for now, it's goodbye. The producer is Danielle Stevens. The executive producer is Maz Ebtahaj. I'm Jonathan Friedland. Thanks, as always, for listening.
This is The Guardian.